This week, an entire new season of Arrested Development, a show that once aired on network TV, was released on Netflix. This hour, how our viewing habits are changing. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today we look not only at how our viewing habits as consumers are evolving, but also how the landscape is changing for TV producers and how industry insiders are restructuring their business models for the new climate. We'll be joined by TV columnist Melissa Zimdars, Tom Larson of Mediacom, and Charles Monroe of the University of Iowa School of Journalism and Mass Communication. Like the new TV viewing landscape? Join our conversation after this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, after this long, rainy holiday weekend, it's fair to say that many of us are sharing all the TV screen experiences we had over the past few days with our colleagues, perhaps back at work. And this hour, we want to talk about how the TV landscape is changing. For instance, for the first time, some of the top new television shows are being produced by online companies rather than traditional cable networks. Take, for instance, this week, an entire new season of Arrested Development, a show that once aired on network TV, released on Netflix, an entire season. Of course, a few weeks ago, it was House of Cards that many people dove into in a big way, released in a similar way. Developments like this have the television industry rethinking its structure. That's one of the things we want to talk about a little bit later in the hour. We want to look not only at how our viewing habits are evolving as consumers, but how the landscape is changing for TV producers, how the industry insiders are restructuring their business model for this new climate. Joining me, first of all, Melissa Zimdars. She is a graduate student in media and communication studies at the University of Iowa, also television columnist for The Little Village Magazine. And good afternoon to you, Melissa. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
We want to have your help, too. River to River listeners, do you like the way TV is evolving, having these entire seasons put on your doorstep all at once? House of Cards, Arrested Development. Are you spending more time watching TV as a result? How has it changed your life? Also, we want to talk about something called cord cutting a little bit later. Cord cutter is someone who has canceled a TV cable subscription, now watching only online. If you fall into that category or have thought about it, we want to hear about your experience. 1-866-780-9100, river-to-river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. Well, Melissa Zimdars, let's start by talking about binging. whole seasons of television shows available on services like Netflix, Hulu, and Amazon, and people are consuming their favorite shows season by season, perhaps concentrated within a span of a few days or even, you know, a few hours, maybe a 24-hour period, rather than waiting a week between each episode. This practice is becoming known as binge watching, a concept picked up by Portlandia. This is a sketch comedy show, if you don't know it, on the Independent Film Channel. In this clip we want to play from it, very humorous, characters Doug and Claire, they agree to watch one episode of Battlestar Galactica before going to a friend's birthday party. And as you will hear, they quickly become engrossed, watching more and more episodes until their lives start to fall apart. And the music you hear transitioning, the bridges of music during the skit signify 45 minutes passing, 8 hours a day, a week. Let's have a listen.
That's amazing.
I just texted Sarah happy birthday, so that's done.
I have to get up early for work, so let's get in our PJs, and then we'll watch one more.
Okay, one more. So good. How is it so good?
What time is it?
It's like daylight already. How did that even happen?
We just stayed up all night.
Do you want to watch more?
My vacation day starts now.
So intense.
Oh my God, so good. Okay, let's just watch the first episode of season two. That's all I want to see.
One more season.
I don't remember the last time I got in the bathroom.
Oh, my legs are like asleep.
I a little bit feel like I have a bladder infection, but I'm just gonna get antibiotics after the next episode. Yeah, okay, thanks, bye. So, I lost my job.
One more episode?
Yeah.
Great.
Next one.
A clip from Portlandia demonstrating the addictive nature of watching television in large installments, otherwise known as binge TV watching. Melissa Zimtar's, I have to believe, as a television columnist for Little Middle Village magazine, this may have happened to you.
I'm guilty as charged. I've been doing this for years, actually, with DVDs or VHS tapes of things I've recorded, just watching nonstop.
Mm-hmm. How does that change the experience, you think, when you don't have to wait a week for an episode? You can delve it out. You can dose it out as fast as you like it.
I think there are positives and negatives to doing this. Sometimes it allows you to enjoy shows you love just as much as you want, which is great. And you can just, if you have nothing to do in a day, you can fill it with wonderful TV. But at the same time, sometimes it also can lead to noticing more holes and plots than you would otherwise. And you might get a little burnt out after watching, 24 episodes of The Good Wife or whatever in a row.
Uh-huh. What other implications do you think there are for the television industry? The people who produce the content are changing their thinking, aren't they?
It seems like they are. There's a lot of people that believe that TV is becoming more complex, especially with the ability to watch all the shows back to back. You might not have to recap as much per episodes. They can just sort of go one into the other more seamlessly. They also may be able to develop, I guess, more, I don't want to say complex again, but yes, more complex plots.
Mm-hmm. Funny you should mention that, because I talked with a friend the other day who had, when Lost came out originally, had never watched it when it was given out on a week-by-week basis, then decided with his wife to watch it in a concentrated form, I believe on Netflix, and he did this for a very specific reason, because Lost has an extremely complex plot.
Yes.
Line, doesn't it? So he said that was absolutely the way he and his wife loved to enjoy Lost.
Yeah. When all those details are fresh in your mind from episode to episode, it's crazy how much more you can enjoy some forms of television, because you might notice more than you would have otherwise as you continue to watch.
Mm-hmm.
But also sometimes not watching it, you don't have the time to reflect on each episode, maybe. So that could be a drawback as well.
Mm-hmm. How have your TV habits changed? We want you to join our conversation. We were talking about the changing media landscape, specifically TV. Melissa Zimtar is with us to begin with. She is a graduate student in media and communication studies at the University of Iowa, television columnist for Little Village Magazine. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Share with us how your television habits have changed. Do you like what it offers you? Perhaps what it's doing to you might be a way that you're putting it, if you find yourself in the position that the characters in that clip from Portlandia are. We're on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. This is a long ways away from TV as I remember it as a child. Now, you won't remember this, of course, Melissa, but for instance, Wizard of Oz was on once a year.
Once sort of like the Sound of Music today.
yeah, there you go. Wizard of Oz, once a year. It was in the fall, and everybody knew the date when it was coming up, and the kids all came in from outside playing to make sure they didn't miss the opening scene of the Wizard of Oz. Back in the day when we had three network channels and IPTV to choose from. This is a tremendous change here. Another trend we want to talk about is, let's go to our phone lines, 1-866-780-9100, before I bring up that next item. Marley is with us, and you are interested in our conversation because we're talking about cord cutting, right?
Yes, I have severed the cord many years ago. I also am about to pull into my job, at which I work in a music and movie department, and I sell a large selection of DVDs and talk with customers on these issues regularly.
Mm-hmm. So you were in a unique position to cut your cord from cable television years ago because you're sort of an insider when it comes to DVD sales, it sounds like.
Actually, my cutting was first. I have not indulged in cable for a decade. And when the world went digital, I am unable to pick up the signals well enough without doing cartwheels on my antenna and only receiving a signal in my attic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, television watching is really pretty much out of the question for me.
How does it change the experience? How has it changed the experience for you? I assume it's more satisfying since you're choosing it.
I become much more of an outdoors person. I'm outside whenever I can be, and that's another reason not to pay for cable. But when I'm home, I work until late in the evening, and when I'm home at night, I will turn to Netflix myself to watch things that I choose, and I like being able to specifically choose what I want to watch.
Mm-hmm. What has this done to DVD sales?
I see a lot of that, too. I mean, the area I'm in, we have television shows in addition to, you know, we get first-run movies. We have old movies. We have foreign films. We have British broadcasting product, and we have American television series. So I'm seeing more people actually drifting into the television series. You can go see the movie. You can get the movie simply online in many cases. But to get certain series and to be able to sit down and watch them when you want, especially making it as a couple or a family unit, I'm seeing more opting for the experience and say, let's sit down and watch this series this week, a couple hours a night.
Mm-hmm. So you can really plan it out. Marlee from Cedar Rapids, thank you for joining us with your thoughts. 1-866-780-9100. And to get your thoughts, Melissa Zimdars, a television columnist for Little Village Magazine, I have here as many as 31% of surveyed respondents say they plan to cut paid television services or were seriously considering it. That's according to a 2012 study by Tremor Video, an independent online video technology company. However, even though this idea of moving away from paid television services has received a lot of hype, we've heard it in the popular press recently, a 2013 study this year called The Reality of Cord Cutting in North America predicts that less than 1% of Americans will actually cut the cord this year. So how significant is this trend, do you think?
It's not nearly as significant as it's been played up in the media the past. I mean, probably for a decade we've been hearing rumors of cord cutting, and it's just not happening at the rates that most media outlets predict or that media companies often fear. That's definitely true. And I think part of it is the options for getting content otherwise are still pretty limited. As the caller was saying, her digital antenna didn't pick up very many broadcast channels. Mine didn't either, which is why cord cutting has been I am a cord cutter, but it's been difficult.
Mm-hmm. So you've had tendencies or feelings like, well, maybe I will get that subscription to cable TV.
If I wasn't a poor graduate student, I would still most definitely have my cable subscription. But I'm also a pretty crafty internet wizard, so I get television in lots of ways that I probably shouldn't share. So access isn't an issue. But for most people, access definitely to content is still an issue.
Mm-hmm. Any site, we're going to be talking a little bit later in the hour with a representative of Mediacom, a company that provides both internet access and cable television to get the view on this trend, cord cutting. From your perspective, from what you've read, any signs that cable companies are worried about this trend?
I don't think they really are, to be honest. I think recently there's been in the news a lot of John McCain's whole unbundling cable push, and that's been a pretty big discussion. I think maybe that's more of an issue than fearing people are actually cord cutting, but I guess that sort of remains to be seen too.
1-866-780-9100, talking about trends in television today. From Monticello, Elena, I hope I got your name right. Hi.
Yes, that is my name.
What a beautiful name you have, and thank you for joining our conversation. What did you want to throw in here?
I am what's considered online a really big fangirl, and I get into the series for the characters, for the plot, and so on, and I have definitely marathoned a couple series on Hulu, and the difference for me is that I empathize with the characters more strongly. I don't have, like, the space to separate myself from the characters or the plot, so if someone gets killed off, it's really traumatic, and then I get this community to share my feelings with online.
Oh, so you go online, you when significant things happen. But what happened when a whole season comes out? It's hard to share in that community installment by installment because you are watching at different rates, are you not?
Yeah, but sometimes there's spoilers and stuff, and then sometimes it's fun seeing other people go through the pain you went through, to be perfectly honest.
Okay. Do you see any dangers here, Elena?
Yes. I've had a couple times where I've stayed up all night and become sleep-deprived, and then I was emotionally vulnerable to the plots and stuff, and okay. Then you really don't think about the advertising and stuff, so it can be kind of subliminal, too.
Okay, Elena, thank you for your thoughts from Monticello. 1-866-780-9100. Let's talk about a few of the other things that I'm sure you've been watching, Melissa Zimdar's British TV, more access to I think, British TV with this trend. Is that true? We have, of course, the huge, huge Downton Abbey following. Other ones, I'm into Foyle's War. I don't know if you've heard of that one.
Oh, I haven't, but I'm really into Call the Midwife right now.
I've heard of that one as well. So it's sort of a new era for British TV in North America.
I think so. And I actually think Netflix, Hulu, and some other internet providers do make more accessible international television, not just BBC content, but I've also noticed more Canadian shows available. So that does increase access, depending on which channels you're looking at, or the Misfits and other things are imported, which is fantastic.
I haven't heard of that one either. Lots of people getting great ideas. What about this niche program? Does niche programming for very small audiences or relatively small audiences have more of a chance in this environment?
Yes, and I think that's partially a product of cable itself becoming hyper-niche. And even broadcast networks themselves are tailored, if you really look at the content, they're sort of tailored to particular groups. So I think that's just inherent in media in general, and streaming like Netflix, Hulu, and other content providers are definitely capitalizing on that trend.
1-866-780-9100. Paul is joining us from Elwood. Hi, Paul.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very well. How has this new environment changed your habits? What are you doing out there? Are you cutting your cord?
Yeah, we cut our cord about a year and a half ago. And we did it mostly because our children were being influenced, or they were seeing a lot of inappropriate commercials and television, things that would just come up on TV that we didn't want them to be watching. And so we ended up going to this, it's called the Roku unit. And you can buy it from Walmart for $90, and you hook it up to your wireless system, and you can actually, this unit actually will go to the media channel's website, like ABC, CBS. It'll go to their website, and anything that they show on the website, it will be accessible from this Roku unit.
Right. So it's like, we've heard of smart TVs. It's like taking a conventional TV and turning it into a smart TV with a Roku.
That's exactly what it's doing. Mm-hmm. And then we have Netflix as well. And with those things, it just allows us to have control over what our children are watching.
And that's really sounds like a very attractive aspect, that you have more control as a parent.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Paul, thank you for joining us from Elwood, 1-866-780-9100. Let's go to Nancy in Marion. Hi, Nancy. What's new on the horizon in TV watching for you?
Well, the thing that my husband and I were actually just talking about not too long ago with the ending of Dancing with the Stars of what are we going to watch is how our interest in the reality / live television programs that have become more apparent. I mean, that's one of the reasons why we've, you know, not the main reason why we've kept our cable box, but one of the main reasons why we've kept it, and how all of these reality television shows have, you know, evolved into more dramatic, you know, things and backstories about the people involved and things like that. And I thought, you know, that's definitely interesting how the whole television aspect, or, you know, they're grasping at whatever we can do to keep the viewers and keep them online. Mm. Just thought I'd make that comment.
Interesting, Nancy. Perhaps Melissa has a comment on your comment.
Well, I don't know, some people are saying that reality television is sort of like the new family television in a way, because we were talking a lot about parental control and, you know, some TV being inappropriate. And reality TV definitely in some ways is more wholesome, especially on broadcast, so they say. But I definitely think that it does – what they're doing does push people online, and then online content pushes people back to TV. It's all sort of mutually reinforcing.
Okay. Nancy, thank you very much for joining us from Marion. Let's go to Chris. Chris in Urbandale. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
We've got a couple minutes before we have to take a break. What's on your mind here?
So kind of going off of, I guess, the theme of parental controls, one of the big things, we recently cut the cord from one of the satellite providers, and the total lack of commercials has been really noticeable. Not only not having to sit through them, but we've got small kids, and they're not being sold constantly every 5 or 10 minutes or whatever it is with, you know, some flashy cereal or toy or whatever. They're not constantly asking for things. So it's been really nice.
That's nice. So that's for you, a good trade-off to pay that subscription to Netflix or Hulu and just pay them for not to not watch an ad.
Exactly. Okay.
Chris in Urbandale, thank you very much. 1-866-780-9100. Let me ask you this question before we go to a break, Melissa Zimdars. We have, I guess some people are calling it the new or second golden age of TV. The golden age of television is something we often refer to when we think of the late 40s, 50s, maybe early 60s, something like that. Do you see this as a golden age of TV, a renaissance of sorts?
I'm a little leery. I feel like every 10 years we have a new golden age of television. And I think that just speaks to how TV is just constantly both the same and comforting because it's the same, but also evolving, and just shows how much resonance television still has in our culture in an era where sort of the internet is dominant. But to me, the internet's looking a lot more like television, just as TV maybe is looking a little bit more like the internet.
Mm-hmm. Is there a time coming, or has it already arrived, when we can't really tell the difference between the internet and TV?
I feel like we're on the cusp of something like that happening. I mean, obviously, television content to me is still very distinct, but YouTube channels are creating their own television now, and I'm doing television in scare quotes. Is any kind of video content television? Does it matter which medium it's on? I don't know. That's definitely up for debate right now.
In your column, do you call something television anymore?
I still do. And I think we have a tendency to do that with everything. Like recording or taping something, we apply old technological terms to new tech.
And we'll see. Yeah. Let's continue our conversation about the changing TV landscape, the changing media landscape, with Melissa Zimdars, a television columnist for Little Village magazine here in Iowa. Are you spending more time watching TV as a result of the way our television landscape is evolving? Having entire seasons all of a sudden available, House of Cards, Arrested Development, or are you a cord cutter? How has that experience been going for you? 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. When we come back, Tom Larson will be joining us. He's with Mediacom. They provide both internet and cable television, and we'll get his take on these changes. That's when we return. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. So good to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Tomorrow on this program, Politics Wednesday, between now and the end of June, decisions will be handed down on a number of cases before the U.S. Supreme Court. Tomorrow on this program, we'll get analysis on some of the biggest cases, cases concerning affirmative action, voting rights, same-sex marriage, the Defense of Marriage Act. Our analysts tomorrow, Rachel Caulfield and Dennis Goldford of Drake University. Hope you'll join us again tomorrow at this time. Today, we're talking about the changing TV landscape, the changing media internet landscape. We're kind of not really sure what we are calling it these days in 2013. Hope you'll join our conversation. Do you like the way TV is evolving? Having entire seasons, House of Cards, Arrested Development, all at once. Are you a cord cutter, someone who has canceled your TV, cable TV subscription, now watching only online? Tell us about your experience. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Joining us for the hour, Melissa Zemdars, graduate student in media and communication studies at the University of Iowa, also a television columnist for Little Village Magazine. And joining us also, adding to our conversation, Tom Larson is with us, joining us by phone somewhere in New York State, I believe. He's a group vice president for legal and public affairs for Mediacom. Mediacom is Iowa's largest internet service provider and the dominant cable provider. Tom Larson, are you there?
I'm here.
Very good. Thank you for joining us, sir. From your perspective, let's just throw it wide open and have you give us, as Iowa's largest internet service provider and dominant cable provider, what are the major changes you're having to deal with?
I think the biggest shift we've seen is one that you've hit, is that people are viewing content in a totally different way, I think, than they did 10, 15 years ago. The internet has changed everything. People can now get access to content. They can view it on mobile devices, on their home computer, on iPads and all kinds of devices inside and outside of the home. And so that really has freed up the consumer to basically, use content, see content, view content anywhere. And so that really has changed us from the living room model, where you had to be in the living room at 8 o'clock to watch your favorite show on Wednesday night. Now it's anytime, anywhere. And so the idea that television is linear has sort of been thrown out the window. Television today is really what the consumer wants it to be.
Mm-hmm. What does that do to the way Mediacom works in terms of your revenue streams, your expenditures, the costs that you have? I'm sure it's a complicated thing, but I wonder if you could, in a simplified way, tell us what, if it is a wrench, how that throws it into it, how you're coping with these challenges.
Yeah, I think actually, interestingly enough, I mean, in one sense, the video model that we've sort of traditionally gotten used to has obviously been eroded by a couple factors. One is there's been tremendous competition from satellite. There's been increased competition from phone companies in recent years, and then you've got this sort of Netflix and Amazon Prime and these over-the-top providers, and so they've sort of eroded our market share on the video side. But at the same time, we've had tremendous growth on the internet side of our business. A strong Netflix product, a strong Amazon Prime product makes our internet product more valuable. So we've seen, huge growth on the internet side of the business. And when you're the fastest internet provider in your areas, it's the product that people want. And so that, while we've sort of seen a decline in video, we've seen a rapid increase in internet, and it's really balanced out our business.
Mm-hmm. So your view of cord cutters from someone representing a company that represents both cable TV and internet provider, these people who say, I can do perfectly fine getting my shows online without a cable subscription, is that a big concern? What is the reaction, for instance, when a Mediacom customer calls up and says, I want to cut my cable? What are they going to be encouraged to do otherwise?
Yeah, I think it's a concern. Although, like I said, I think that to be a cord cutter on the video side, you need a strong internet pipe. And so we still, in a lot of cases, end up being that person's internet service provider. And so they're really not a true cord cutter in that sense. But what concerns me more than cord cutting, I mean, cord cutting is real. I don't deny that at all. And I think that it's maybe slowly developing. It's probably not as rapid as people make it out to be, but it's definitely there. It's definitely happening. The bigger concern for us, and I spend a lot of time in Washington talking about this issue all the time, and it's price. I mean, we really feel like the price of video has gotten out of control, and we fight, tooth and nail in Washington to try to get some reform with respect to how the market has developed. And we all buy, we meaning the cable guys, the satellite guys, the phone guys, we all buy, even the Netflix folks buy from the same people. We all buy from a group of six or seven huge media conglomerates, and they set the price. They set the packages, they set how it's sold, they set everything about the video service. And it's not necessarily what consumers want. We think this sort of big bundled world maybe is past its time.
And we need, mm-hmm. Go ahead.
We need maybe some more a la carte introduced into the world where people have more choice. I think Netflix, the beauty of Netflix has been it's given consumers choice. I mean, they get to go on and see certain programs. You know, they can see them all at once when they want to see them. And Amazon Prime maybe is even a better example. I can go online tonight at my house and pick a movie that I want to watch or show, and I just pay the price for it. I pay... You know, I as a consumer say, all right, that $4.99 or that $3.99 is worth the price to me, and I'm going to pay it. If it's not worth the price, I won't pay it.
Yeah. What do you think of the John McCain's recent remarks? He wrote a few days ago in the Los Angeles Times, quote, America's $100 million cable and satellite subscribers are forced to pay even higher bills for a growing number of channels they do not watch. The American people are being ripped off, in Senator John McCain's words. If you are in favor of unbundling cable TV shows, the offerings, how would that work?
Yeah, I think what you would end up having is a market where we would focus in on the very expensive products, which are really the sports products and the broadcast products. And we would say to those consumers, you know, we're not going to tax the rest of America so that you can watch your sports. We're going to let you pay for it because you're the one that wants it. And the rest of the folks, you know, they don't have to pay for it. Right now, every American pays roughly $5 a month, or every TV household pays roughly $5 a month for ESPN, whether or not you watch it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not fair to the 80% of Americans that don't watch it.
I think Melissa Zimdar is our television columnist for the Little Village Magazine, wants to jump in here. Melissa, your comment?
Well, I guess I'm just finding it interesting since channels like ESPN, because of their subscription rates or fees, actually subsidize most of the other channels that people might watch. So if people are only paying for ESPN, like, what does that mean for all the other channels that are sort of bundled with it?
Yeah, I think you'd have some you'd probably lose some of the fringe channels that maybe don't have a real audience, and it probably would mean a smaller video universe. But at the same time, I think the vast majority of Americans watch, you know, a limited number of channels. And so we really, and the other thing I think that people lose in this equation is that, you know, ESPN and others, you know, like to say that a la carte, you know, wouldn't be good for consumers because it would drive the price of ESPN up for those that wanted to watch it. But I say that we wouldn't have to pay Albert Pujols $220 million if we lived in a world where ESPN couldn't collect every penny that they go out and spend on, you know, TV rights. I mean, they can spend $825 million to get the U.S. Open tennis tournament because they know they can turn around to Mediacom and DirecTV and Dish Network and charge us for it. Mm-hmm. And we, in turn, have to go charge our consumers for it. And it's not fair. I mean, there is no spending, you know, conscience when it comes to these sports, you know, channels. They just spend and spend and spend. It's an arms race, and the person that loses in this is the consumer. And we just, you know, I go to Washington all the time, and I actually lobby a lot with DirecTV, a lot with you know, Verizon and Time Warner and other companies, and we all are saying the same thing, that it's not working for our business to have to keep charging our customers more money.
Is that why you have very low customer satisfaction, according to a latest survey by the American Customer Satisfaction Index? The lowest customer satisfaction ranking of any industry in America, worse than airlines, health insurance companies, gas stations. Is that the reason?
Yeah, I think consumers are frustrated with the prices constantly going up. There's never been a channel in all of our years of running Mediacom that's gone down in price. I mean, they only go one direction.
But it's not your fault, you're saying. No.
We all buy from the same wholesaler, and so we all have to buy it, and they actually dictate the bundles that those channels have to go on. They dictate the price of the channel, how it has to be sold. And so people think that you know, it's the cable company or the satellite company that's building the package. Those packages are told to us. We're told you have to sell it this way. And if you don't sell it that way, you can't sell it. So your option is either to have the channel and sell it the way they want it to be sold, or not have it. And, you know, we've had some famous programming fights in Iowa, I'm sure you remember. And, you know, customers... you know, get frustrated when you lose things. I mean, once you take something away from them, they get extremely frustrated.
Let me ask you quickly before we say goodbye, Tom Larson, about pirating. HBO's Game of Thrones, now estimated to be the most pirated show that has aired on television. How do you view pirating at Mediacom? We have heard reports that it can actually be beneficial for certain shows.
Yeah, I mean, we don't necessarily have a dog in that fight. I mean, we, as an internet service provider, we certainly, you know, want our customers to do things lawfully and not use the internet for illegal purposes. But the pirating, I think, is a bigger issue for the content owners. I mean, they obviously want paid for the content that they produce. And they're going to be very upset when it's stolen from them. Since we're not in the content producing business, mm-hmm. you know, it's really not our fight.
Do you see cable TV, what you're offering, internet service providing, changing in the future to be a completely different model for consumers?
Yeah, I think that it's going to change. I mean, I think that the consumer, if Washington doesn't change, the consumer will change. The market, and you're going to see. I mean, there's going to be more Netflix. There's a service called Aereo that's been launched in some of the bigger football cities, that essentially created a better antenna for receiving off-air channels. And so, in cities like New York, you can now pay a very low fee to get all your broadcast channels off-air on a mini antenna, and that's been very disruptive. I mean, so Netflix is disruptive, Aereo is disruptive, and when you have disruptive market forces, I think the market changes. And I think that's good for consumers. I think consumers benefit when there are when there's outside pressure put on an old model, and that's good.
Tom Larson, thank you for being with us, Group Vice President for Legal and Public Affairs for Mediacom, joining us from New York State. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. So finishing up our hour, talking about the changing media, changing TV landscape. Mary is in Cedar Rapids. Mary, we're quickly approaching the end of the hour, but what do you have on your mind?
I was a very big TV watcher growing up and through my entire adulthood. And just recently I had an infant, and that really changed the way that I watched TV. And I have cable and used to watch all the TV shows and all the commercials. And since having my infant, I had to utilize my DVR a lot more and watch Netflix and watch a lot of TV online. So I really don't watch commercials any longer, since I only watch TV at night. And I'm just kind of wondering how this is going to affect the quality of television with more and more people using the internet and DVR boxes and not watching the commercials, and, you know, these TV shows not having the revenue stream that they used to have.
Not from commercials anyway, but from subscriptions, Melissa.
From subscriptions,
right.
And also still product placement. It's way more rampant, I think, than we usually acknowledge. We're still being advertised too.
Yeah, but we are seeing a lot of quality. Wouldn't you agree out there, Mary?
I totally agree. I think right now we've got a lot less reality TV show than we did even like 5 years ago. And I don't know if like having the internet and having other ways to watch TV is that going to have an effect on the quality of television for the future?
I guess we'll find out. Mary from Cedar Rapids, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Joining us for the final part of our hour, also Charles Monroe is with us, Associate Director of Undergraduate Studies and a lecturer and daily Iowan TV coach at the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Iowa. Charles Monroe, welcome to our program.
Hi, Ben. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for joining us. So we wanted to get, as we close here, from you sort of the major changes in this context we've been talking about for TV news, the major changes this has put in the pipeline for TV news, because
sure.
you teach a young generation who sure. aspires to be in that industry.
Yeah, my whole background is in TV news. I started over 30 years ago. Been teaching just for the latter part of my time here, and there's no doubt there's huge changes, but there is one very interesting difference with news, and also I heard a little bit of your discussion about sports, but news is something that it's a little hard to delay. It's not a program that you necessarily want to tape and watch later or DVR and watch later. We all are interested in what's going on, and what's happened is that the appetite for news now is greater than ever, which is a good thing. But at the same time, the delivery mechanism is still TV. Most people still go to their local TV sets at night to see what's going on. And as a matter of fact, of all the impact on all the industries on news, particularly on the networks, local TV is still actually done pretty well. And in fact, there are probably more local TV newscasts on now than there ever was.
Haven't these changes, though, been cutting into our mealtime news, the 5:30 or the later news at 10 o'clock in the evening? Hasn't that been dropping?
Yeah, no. Actually, in most cases, you'll find local TV stations with a 4 o'clock news and a 9 o'clock news and a 10 o'clock news, 11 o'clock news. Now, that I would argue also that doesn't necessarily mean that those shows are covering the news any better or in greater depth. Probably the opposite. But what's happened is that because people do want to see their news, they want to see what's going on now and tend not to want to see it later, they'll tune in, and they still will tune in. And that business model is still working in local TV. It's still the number one source for news in the country.
So when you talk with young people in college wanting to work in TV news, what is your message as far as the direction it is taking from here on out?
Well, I tell them the good news is I sometimes bring in a hula hoop to class and I say, you remember one of these things, the fad went in and out? Well, the good thing is we're not making hula hoops. You know, we're making something that people want, something that they desire, there's an appetite for. So we still have to go out and cover the news. We still have to tell stories well, report and write well, all of those things. But that to understand that the delivery mechanism, the distribution mechanism is going to be different. You know, you do a different kind of writing and reporting on the internet, on a website, than you do on a local TV newscast or even on radio. And that's what's happening now. Even the young students who I see are saying, you know, it's really interesting for us. We like reading our news, but what the difference is now with younger people is that they tend to think that because of social networks, if something happens, it'll come find them. In other words, they don't have to go seek it anymore. It'll come find them. Somebody will say, "Hey, you gotta see this. They've caught the guys in Boston. You gotta go to your TV or you gotta go to your website." So there's still a lot of activity there, simply because the appetite is there. But the delivery mechanism—that's what's changed.
Okay, thank you very much for joining us, Charles Monroe.
Thank you, Ben.
Of the University of Iowa School of Journalism and Mass Communication. As we finish up this hour, I want to turn back to a guest we've had this whole hour, Melissa Zimdars. Let's look into the future from what you know and from what you've been studying. What do you see there as we round out this hour?
Well, there's a few things I see. Providers like Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime will definitely continue getting into the content game. And I think they have to, because acquiring the streaming rights from other content providers and makers is increasingly more difficult, especially when you have companies like Time Warner Cable offering their own subscription package. So if everyone's getting into the providing game, then Netflix has to become a maker as well. And at the same time, other companies are getting, I mean, into streaming and content, I guess I kind of said that. But to me, the lines are just blurring. You have to be both a provider and a content maker almost at the same time.
Mm-hmm. So there is being a provider, being that, let's say, copper wire is not enough.
Yes. Okay. Seems like you have to do both almost in this environment.
Okay. And we haven't talked about what do you think about this idea of unbundling? We didn't talk about that with you. John McCain's comment about unbundling. You heard what the representative of Mediacom had to say about that. What's your view?
Yes. I think there's a fundamental difference between people unbundling themselves and the industry offering unbundled options. In every industry paper I've read about the internet unbundling themselves, results in pretty much consumers paying the same amount for 5 channels as opposed to 100. So if all the small channels are not being subsidized, many of them will vanish. And then the ones that would get $3 from 100 million people, since there's less people subscribing, they'll have to charge more per channel. So to me, I'm a little leery about how that might work out for the consumer.
So if you think we had a complete a la carte picture here, that wouldn't necessarily lead to paying less, just because I really only like 5 channels. I only want to pay for 5 channels. You think it's just those 5 channels would be more expensive?
Analysts predict that instead of $3 for ESPN, it'll be $25 for for ESPN. So
if it was totally unbundled.
If it was totally unbundled by the cable companies.
Okay, I want to thank you. We'll wait and see what happens to our TV, our media landscape, and thank you for giving us your perspective, your insights. Melissa Zimdars, graduate student in Media and Communication Studies at the University of Iowa, television columnist for Little Village Magazine. It's been a pleasure having you on this hour.
Thank you.
Coming up tomorrow on this program, between now and the end of June, decisions will be handed down on a number of cases before the U.S. Supreme Court. It's Politics Wednesday tomorrow. We'll get analysis of some of the biggest cases before the Supreme Court, which we'll be hearing about in the coming weeks. Cases concerning affirmative action, voting rights, same-sex marriage, the Defense of Marriage Act. We'd like you to join our conversation tomorrow with our analysts, Rachel Caulfield and Dennis Goldford of Drake University. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Technical support from Dennis Reese. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.